This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 5th of May, 2023. Hello. And welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers Nick Kearns.
Hello.
Vara Williams.
Hello.
And Paul Newman.
Hello.
The first thing to say is if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, do make sure it's plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. Now, let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Cathedral to screen Big Day. Outrage as Top Doc gets the sack. And City's first Books Festival, a huge success. And the first headline story, Nick, please.
Yes, Cathedral to Screen Big Day. And hopefully you'll be reading this during the coronation weekend. Winchester Cathedral is preparing to host a grand celebration of the coronation of King Charles III, featuring contemporary decorations in green and soft gold that reflect the King's interests in conservation and the environment. The cathedral will be adorned with unique and symbolic floral arrangements, banners and other special touches to mark the occasion. Large flower arrangements will adorn the steps of the dais, and potted trees will replace the candle standards and be placed around the cathedral. Additionally, a new set of green and gold banners featuring images of the King will be showcased, representing his interests in the environment, young people, the church, interfaith matters, architecture, family, and the military. On Friday the 5th of May, a public Thanksgiving service was held. The service featured mass children's choirs composed of around 200 young people, the Spitfire Band, the Royal Corps of Drums, and other military musicians. The cathedral's clergy, civic and military representatives, and representatives of the King's charities and other faiths were also in procession. The service also included contemporary poems read by a Prince's Trust graduate and biblical readings by one of the first King's Scouts. The address was given by the former Dean of Westminster Abbey. On Saturday, May the 6th, a screening of King Charles III's coronation will be available to watch from inside Winchester Cathedral. As well as the TV screens throughout the nave of the cathedral, there will be a central large screen by the altar for all in attendance to watch this historic moment together. No booking is required. Seats will be on a first-come, first-served basis. The screening will begin at 11 a.m. The Reverend Canon Andy Trenier said, "We are thrilled to be hosting the coronation of King Charles III at Winchester Cathedral. Our team has put great effort into creating impressive decorations that reflect the King's interests and values, and we are excited to provide a memorable experience for all those who attend the services and events. We look forward to welcoming people from near and far to join us in this historic celebration.
And the next headline is outrage as top doc gets the sack. Former colleagues and patients have rallied round a senior doctor who has been fired by an NHS trust. Martin Pittman, consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist for hospitals in Winchester and Andover, was sacked by Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust at the beginning of March. He is contesting the decision, and an employment tribunal is due to be held later this year. Former staff believe his forced departure was on the grounds of him being a whistleblower who spoke up for midwives and patient safety after a three-year witch hunt by the NHS Trust. Retired sonographer and one of Martin's former colleagues, Jackie Maltby, 70, said, "My understanding is that Martin had a meeting raising concerns about staffing levels and consequent patient safety. Somehow the focus of the complaint shifted onto Martin himself and his interactions with staff." Winchester resident Linda Emptage has created a Facebook group for people to share their outrage and push for a review. The group, called Friends of Martin Pittman, created on April the 22nd, already has more than 360 members, with a growing number of stories of how the doctor saved people's lives, their babies, and how poorly he's been treated. Linda first formed the group to alert people that Mr. Pittman was no longer working and give him a boost from public support, but she has been overwhelmed with the reaction. She said, "Reading all the messages, it's amazing. I don't know any other human being that would have elicited that response. It speaks volumes. Martin has looked after me for 20 years. Without him, we may not have had our beloved Jake, and I am horrified to learn more of the way he has been treated. He saved my life." The Mitchell Dover resident shared that Martin was electrocuted by a piece of faulty equipment back in 2020 and was rushed to hospital. On his return, the equipment was still there, so Mr. Pittman demanded all the kit should be recalled, and checked. Recently retired midwife and colleague of Martin's for more than 20 years, Darrenal Holtney, recalled Martin being asked to leave back in May 2019 for more than a year while the trust decided on his employment. Darrenal, 61, who worked at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital for 33 years, said, "My understanding is that he spoke to management about concerns that the midwives had about working conditions, and because he spoke up, they disciplined him. There have been rumours around what happened, but no one knows the full truth. It was definitely a witch hunt." Martin is broken. He feels he's let down the women and the midwives in the area because he can no longer be a voice. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, is unable to comment in detail with an employment tribunal due to take place in October. A spokesman said, "HHFT takes all complaints, including grievances and whistleblowing made by its staff, extremely seriously. Each is handled impartially, professionally, and in line with robust policies. In certain cases, this includes the commissioning of independent reports and reviews by outside experts to ensure the highest levels of scrutiny. In addition, every effort is made to support the health and well-being of those involved in what can be a challenging process. We do not comment on cases relating to individual employees or former employees, particularly where there are ongoing processes." At least 42 people have written to Winchester MP Steve Brine to push for an independent review. Mr. Pittman's family said they were unable to comment at this time.
City's first Books Festival, a huge success. The first Winchester Books Festival, sponsored by the University of Winchester, has been pronounced a big success. Organisers say that more than 1,200 people attended events held in a variety of venues around the city, including the university, over 3 days. Festival co-founder Sophie Liarde said, "We had good turnouts for all events, and it was a real cross-community festival using lots of different venues. We couldn't have done this without the support of university staff, academics and students." Film production students from the university, Jack Robinson, Isabel Hood, Becca Lane, Tamo Ford and Jacob Lewis, filmed all the events. They are now editing a festival film due to go online in the next few weeks. The university's business school hosted 2 events. Mark Morris, talking about his latest work, The Anglo-Saxons, A History of the Beginnings of England, and Rebecca Abraham speaking about Licoricea of Winchester, Power and Prejudice in Medieval England, The Rise and Fall of a Remarkable Jewish Businesswoman. Dr. Eric Lacey, senior lecturer in English language and linguistics, took part in a filmed interview with Mark Morris before his talk for possible use in the archives of the university's Centre for Medieval and Renaissance Research. The university's West Downs Auditorium was the venue for the author and top lawyer, Marina Wheeler, to discuss her family memoir, My Mother, Partition and the Punjab. Judith Hennigan, senior lecturer in creative writing at the university, hosted a discussion entitled How to Get Published at the Milner Hall. The panel included Winchester author Claire Fuller, who studied for her MA in creative writing at the university and received an honorary doctorate in October. And there's a photograph of all involved in accompanying the article.
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Nick will follow this with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Axtell, Mary, on the 17th of April 2023, in Winchester Hospice, aged 81 years. Carmichael, Thomas, peacefully at Brendan Care Nursing Home, Otterbourne, on the 19th of April 2023, aged 93 years. Chaffee, Richard John, suddenly passed away at home on the 23rd of April 2023. Dillow, Ian, MBEJPFRSA, passed away peacefully at home after a long, brave battle with brain cancer with his family around him on the 11th of April 2023, aged 81. Heard, John Leonard. John died peacefully on Friday the 28th of April, aged 94 years, at the Abbots Barton Care Home. Christian comment has been written by Rosemary A. Baker this week. The title is "The Coronation is a Religious Service." Thank you, Nick.
So, will you be glued to the television on Saturday to watch the coronation of Charles III and his consort, Queen Camilla? Or will you be recording it to watch later, perhaps? You might be indifferent and will see the odd flash on the news broadcasts. It will no doubt be a ceremony of great grandeur, with superb music and indeed drama, when the king swears his oaths and both are crowned. However, at the heart of the ceremony will be a moment that we and the millions watching won't be able to see. The anointing. We might assume that the most important part of the ceremony is the crowning. But in fact, it is the anointing that is central to what, after all, is a religious ceremony. This is the moment when the Archbishop of Canterbury takes oil that has been specially made from olives grown on the Mount of Olives and blessed, and touches the king, and later the queen, on the head, the palms, and the breast, as a sign of God's blessing. Prayers are said, asking for God to strengthen and inspire the king in a moment that mirrors the anointing of monarchs, not only throughout the history of this country, but also in Scripture. The act of anointing will also be familiar to Christians, who have themselves received the sacrament of baptism, confirmation, or ordination, or witnessed these services. This anointing, unlike others, is not going to be public, but will take place in private behind a screen. The Archbishop, in his explanation of the ceremony, says that the anointing is a moment of stillness and simplicity. This is to allow the king, and indeed us all, to focus on God. There are other points that also encourage this focus. Readings from the Bible, Holy Communion, and communal worship all are in the coronation service. The service also stresses, through the oaths the king will make, the service of others. Where this service differs, as far as we know, from others, is that for the first time, we, the audience, both in the cathedral and watching on television, are being invited to swear allegiance to the king. We will, if we do it, say aloud the printed words before us, either on the order of service or on our screens. This has led to a lot of discussion, both on TV, radio, and in the newspapers, as to what people feel about doing this. There seem to be the complete range of views, from enthusiasts to the Over My Dead Body Brigade. So not only do we have polls about whether we support the monarchy versus are we in favour of a republic with an elected president, but polls on whether we will say the oath of allegiance versus those who will not. My own view of Charles changed from indifference to admiration after meeting him and seeing him with patients at a service for a special anniversary of the NHS. I was very impressed with the time and care he took to speak and listen to them all. I am planning to watch the coronation, and I will read the words of Oath of Allegiance. They may be out loud, I'm not sure.
Thank you, Nick. And now this week's letters to the editor. Vara, can you start us off with Going Electric, please?
Yes, this one is from Christopher Sharrett, and he says, I must take issue with your editorial line and Chris Gillam on two related points, April the 20th and letters April the 27th. Chris Gillam sees a conflict between reducing emissions and increasing motor traffic. Has the anti-car lobby not heard of electric vehicles? They form a growing share of road traffic and produce no emissions. In fact, every driver who buys an electric car is switching from a petrol or diesel vehicle, so they're actually reducing total emissions. Likewise, the M3 Junction 9 scheme does not equate to growth of the road network. The M3 and the A34 will not be any longer than they are now. But drivers switching between them will avoid the need to stop at a roundabout and wait for a green light, which happens now, and adds to emissions. All parties agree on phasing out petrol and diesel vehicles, but we also need an efficient road network for all road users. And that comes from Christopher Sharrett, Waverley Drive, South Wanston.
The next letter is entitled Cutting Costs. Much has been made today about energy performance certificates and particularly new rules for landlords. I recently moved home and can I say the system is a farce? I also had a private survey which failed to spot defects. What I found was a section of new ceiling in my bungalow totally uninsulated. Most of the pipework, heating and water, was uninsulated. I needed more than 200 rolls of insulation and 100 metres of pipe insulation to make my difficult roof space secure. There needs to be more control on those who prepare EPCs to ensure a proper job is done. Sellers should be required to clear roof spaces to make proper surveys possible, in my opinion. Oh, and the effect of all this has been to reduce my energy bill by 30%. Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
Alex Heathcote takes us back to Road Networks again, with a letter entitled Peace Again. How lovely it is now that Garnier Road is closed to traffic. It makes the Water Meadows and St Catherine's Hill so much nicer. And apologies if you're hearing the siren, you wouldn't hear it on Garnier Road. St Cross has almost become peaceful again, although the noise from the M3 can still be heard. Why there is no type of soundproofing barrier or fence along the M3 as it passes through Winchester is criminal, or should be. What a massive difference that would make to the constant noise pollution. But that's a different story. Perhaps, like the old bypass and Five Bridges Road, Garnier Road could be let to return to nature instead of going back to the busy rat run it has now become. Wouldn't that be nice? Well, that's from Alex Heathcote, St Cross Road.
And this letter is entitled Simply Awesome. Comes from Simon Lever. My wife and I attended this extraordinary event, the Ukrainian concert at the Hospital of St Cross. The talent and dedication demonstrated by the wonderful citizens of Ukraine was simply awesome. The beautiful traditional dress also reflected pride in their country. The dancers' broad smiles were infectious, shining a light on us all. The Brothers of St. Cross deserve praise for organising such a truly wonderful event. Let us hope there will be a repeat performance. If so, we will certainly attend. And that was from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Seeking singers. I had to be very careful how I pronounced that. Seeking singers. Winchester City Festival Choir is looking forward to singing The Wind in the Willows by John Rutter. It's a fun story which will be performed with a narrator on July the 5th at Littleton Memorial Hall, with weekly rehearsals from Wednesday, May the 17th. Many people will remember the amusing story from their childhoods, and Rutter's music brings it to life. We welcome new singers. It's a good opportunity to try out singing if you haven't experienced, or to check us out if you have. Who knows, you may want to join us in September. We're looking for more tenors, basses and sopranos. For more information, it's available from Winchester City Festival Choir. There's a website, wcfchoir.org, and that's by Esther Hack, who writes from Stockbridge Road, Full Flood. So Wednesday, it's July the 5th if you want to attend the performance.
Barry Sherlock, quite a well-known local historian, now writes about Chronicle History. I was interested to read the report of the talk on the 250-year history of your paper I gave recently to the Friends of Winchester Cathedral, Chronicle, April the 27th. I suppose I should be pleased that it was complimentary, but unfortunately it hardly covered the subject and was in many respects misleading. The event was superbly organised by the Friends in the Paul Woodhouse suite. I was delighted to have a full house, and there were more participants online. The assembly of wires and plugs and cameras worked faultlessly. The members of the audience seemed to be appreciative, but contrary to your report, I doubt whether they oohed and aahed, although they may have happily sipped wine. And I doubt whether they imagined that Chronicle reporters wear a Mac and a pork pie hat. More seriously, the remarkable story of your paper is surely one to be cherished and honoured for chronicling events in the county against relentless competition for so long. Yet I doubt whether anyone reading the report would have gathered this. So, to set the record straight for your readers, here is the short story. It was started in Southampton in August 1772 by James Linden, a schoolmaster and serial entrepreneur. Unfortunately, he was bankrupted after 6 years, and there followed a succession of owners based in Winchester, each trying to make it work. Eventually, in 1813, it entered calmer waters under the Jacob and Johnson Partnership, which lasted more than 100 years, at first in both Winchester and Gosport. From 1936, it was for more than 50 years in the hands of an amazing editor, not editrix, Monica Woodhouse, estranged wife of Paul, who taught at Peter Simmons School. A few years after her death, in 1987, it entered its current phase as one of a stable of newspapers owned by a giant American media corporation. Curiously, the era of independent ownership is still very much in some people's minds. I was contacted recently by a man in his 90s who remembers taking copy for classified ads under the watchful eye of the editor, whom he describes as very kind, even asking the newspaper's accountant to advise him on his future career. Those who want to learn more about your remarkable paper might ask the Friends of Winchester Cathedral for a link to the talk, which can now be viewed online. And as I say, that's from Barry Sherlock.
Era of hope, says Mark Rowe. I, like many millions, will be watching the coronation of His Majesty King Charles III on May the 6th with my family, Charlie and Bear, Georgie, plus Kevin R. and family. As we enter a new historical era, I know Your Majesty will be a king of the people alongside Queen Camilla. This era will be an era of hope for the future and bring joy to all. May you long reign and true, Your Majesty, with God's grace, from your loyal subject, Mark Rowe, Taplings Close, Week.
This letter is about the allegiance oath, and it's from a citizen of goodwill in Compton. On May the 6th, in the midst of a ceremony that some will regard as meaningful, we will be invited to swear an oath of allegiance to the new king. Many will blanch at the prospect of swearing an allegiance to an individual they find hard to respect and an institution they regard as irrelevant. Wouldn't it be so much better if the new king were to invite us to swear an allegiance to our country and all our fellow citizens of goodwill? Roger Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
And now there's one for all you footy fans. City surpassing many expectations. Having reported on all 48 league and cup games played by Winchester City this season for the Hampshire Chronicle, it was good to see a couple of people write in and talk positively about the season just enjoyed. It would probably also be worth mentioning that of the squad that got the club promoted last season, as many as 9 of them had indicated at the start of this season that they were either playing their football elsewhere or were not in a position to commit themselves to playing football this season. However, by the end of this campaign, six of these players had re-signed for the club later in the campaign, and the contribution of these players was important in the latter stages of the season. In addition, our record against the league's bottom was good, with 4 wins and 6 draws from 10 matches, with 1 of these victories and 3 of the draws, a late goal we scored had a bearing on the result, while the other 3 draws, 1 was goalless and 2 were 1-1 draws in which we came from behind to draw. We also had to come from behind to achieve one of the victories, and all of this demonstrates that there is fighting spirit in the camp and that the players keep going for 90 minutes. Next season will bring its own challenges, but it is fair to say that the results of the first season of Southern League football have surpassed the expectations of many people. Also, from struggling to attract 3-figure gates for many games the previous season, the attendances for home games are now usually above 200 and sometimes above 300. And that's from Malcolm Clark, Lee Road in Eastleigh.
Thank you, that's all the letters for today. If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836, or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could write an old-style letter to the editor at 5 Up Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we'll carry on with the editorial comment. First person, letter from Westminster and Belgarum. The editor heads up her article this week with "The Coronation That Will Unite a Nation." She writes, "You will have to be around 75 years of age to have any memory of the coronation of Queen Elizabeth II in 1953. For many, it is seared in the memory as the first time they had watched television. Now, 70 years on, we are preparing for the coronation of Queen Elizabeth's son in a ceremony the origins of which stretch back to the Middle Ages, if not earlier. Many of these ceremonies were held in Winchester Cathedral, as the feature by Dr. Tom Watson illuminates. It is easy to dismiss the event, and we all know the arguments against the monarchy, this mad parade, as the Sex Pistols sang in the Jubilee year of 1977. But whether you like it or not, the coronation will remind the world what it is to be British. The crown has little political power, but it fulfills a role better than any other system of binding a nation together. Charles, who is 75, will be king for maybe 20 years if he has the constitution of his mother, and then be succeeded by his son William, and he in turn by his son George. And that is how it should be. And if you ask most of the people in this country, they would agree. Not perfect, but better than the alternatives." Now, George Hayter writes about tapping into saving water in first person this week. Here's Vara.
Yes, he says, "To wash your hands, you turn on the tap by lifting the lever and half of you gets soaked. So you reach for a towel and do your best to dry the front of your clothes. Then you have another go, turning back to the tap and this time elevating its lever more cautiously. You don't want to get drenched again. Easy does it. You prise the lever upwards millimetre by millimetre, wary of the fire hose force returning. No water yet, so gingerly you start raising the lever slightly faster, and suddenly the lever gives way several millimetres. That brings back the torrent, which cascades onto the porcelain and rushes in a tidal wave to the front of the basin. The tsunami continues, climbing the front of the basin and again overwhelming its rim and soaking your front. By this time, you're swearing at the tap. Still, you must wash your hands. You have another go. This time, you lift the perishing little stub of a lever, not by millimetres, but by hair's breadths. It is time-consuming, but eventually water emerges at slightly less than shirt-probing velocity. But still the flow outdoes an elephant's trunk. We don't want to waste water, do we? So we try to lower the lever. To avoid going back to waterless square one, you try not nudging the lever, but just tapping it gently. Nothing happens. So you tap it harder, and you can guess where that takes you. Back to square one and zero flow. So you pull the wretched lever up, any old how, and let the nation's precious water flow down the plug hole at a rate rivaling Niagara. Trouble is, it's a cold day, and the water's cold. You find a red dot on one side of the tap and a blue dot on the other, and you move the lever to the red side to get the water warm. When it arrives, it's boiling, so you turn the lever to halfway between the red and the blue ends of its turning arc. Too far. Freezing again. Nudge it back towards hot, and it's boiling again. Nudging this way and that, tolerable temperature is eventually achieved. But during all that to-ing and fro-ing, the lever got nudged down a bit and has now gone back to a trickle. This messing about with lever taps in homes, hotels and places of work is wasting Britain's water. I wonder if plumbers and kitchen designers should stop installing wasteful lever taps. Wouldn't we waste less water if we went back to traditional rotary taps, which provide precise adjustment? Annually in the UK, over 3 trillion litres of mains water is wasted, according to research firm Inflomatics. That's enough to fill 1,200 Olympic-sized swimming pools every day. About a quarter of the waste occurs not at taps, but at costly-to-fix underground leaks in water company pipes. Nevertheless, I think tap installers should do what they can to waste less water in the home. Choosing rotary taps would cost nothing. Southern Water's current planning application for a new 8.1-kilometre pipeline to take water from the Itchen underlines the threat to rivers posed by increasing demand for scarce water. We're getting a new kitchen, and it seems to me that getting rotary taps will lower our water bills. The Chartered Institute of Plumbing and Heating Engineering says lever taps were introduced to reduce the spread of germs. The idea was to cut time touching taps, but I reckon lever taps actually lengthen time touching. Lever taps are like the old Heinz tomato ketchup bottles, which had a narrow neck, so you had to shake up and down for ages to get anything out. People shook them harder and harder till all the sauce flopped out in one go. What a waste. Heinz are phasing out those bottles. Maybe the same should be done with lever taps.
The MP Flick Drummond has a few words for us this week. Paul has the letter from Westminster. Thank you, Paul.
Thursday was polling day for the local elections, and may I urge everyone to use their vote. These elections have a much lower turnout than a general election, but how our local services are run is very important. Our right to vote was also a long-fought one, especially for women and working-class men, who only received the right 105 years ago. These elections are a first because everyone will need to show a photo ID to vote. A driving licence, passport, a blue badge and bus passes are just some of the photo ID you can use. It also doesn't have to be in date, just a good likeness of you. Please don't forget to take it along, otherwise you will not be given a ballot paper. In what is a big week for the country, the coronation of King Charles III is taking place on Saturday, and I think the excitement is starting to grow. This is an important day for our country. We have not seen a coronation since 1953, when Queen Elizabeth was crowned, and not one of a king since 1937, when her father, King George VI, took the oath to serve. To say this is an ancient and solemn ceremony is probably not doing it justice. The whole world will be watching our country at its best. I know there will be celebrations across Meon Valley. Thank you to all those who have organised them to mark the day. Fingers crossed for good weather. Last week, I was in Finland looking at early years education and childcare with the Education Select Committee I sit on in Parliament. Finland is always held up as an exemplar in education, and our latest inquiry is on childcare. This is a big national topic here in Britain, as the cost is one of the barriers to getting back to work. The main difference is the cost of childcare, a maximum of €295 a month, and training of teachers. The other main difference is children start formal education at 7, although it was interesting to see letters and numbers on the walls of the nurseries, so they are learning while they play. Finland can afford to be more agile on these policies, with a population of only 5.5 million and higher rates of taxation. We visited government and municipality offices, as well as schools and childcare centres. It was a packed agenda as always, but we had time to question teachers and officials. We will be feeding the findings into our inquiry. It was interesting and helpful to see how another country tackles the subject. Being away on business meant that I was paired with a Labour Member of Parliament for voting, and that included the illegal migration bill. I was very pleased to see the amendments I signed being accepted by the government. This will give some safeguards to the most vulnerable children and people, and we will wait to see if there are any further amendments from the House of Lords. Finally, I visited RAF Marham on Thursday as part of the Armed Forces parliamentary scheme to learn more about the F-35B Lightning aircraft and the training of pilots for both the RAF and the Fleet Aero. It is a very successful multitask aircraft, and we will have 74 of them very soon, with a quarter based on our aircraft carriers. That's from Flick Drummond, who you may know has lost her candidature for the next general election to Suella Braverman, the MP for Fareham.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Paul. Move on to Balgarum now. There's two pieces from an alternative point of view. Nick, what have you got there?
Young talent on the show. Perrin School held its 25th annual Creative Arts Festival. The festival featured a range of performances from pupils across multiple year groups. The performances varied from covers of songs to short scenes from plays to original skits and dances to even a performance of karate kata. Children from nearby Sun Hill Junior School also made a guest appearance during the night, performing songs from the musical Annie in tribute to TV presenter Paul O'Grady, who died recently. The performances were judged by a panel featuring several Perrins alumni who voted for their favourite performers, with prizes going to the best Key Stage 3 and Key Stage 4 performers, as well as the best overall performer and audience favourite. Head of Creative Arts Maralitsa Alexiou told the Chronicle that she was very proud of how the evening went. "The Perrin students never fail to deliver. They understand the level of expectations. We set the bar really high and they always smash the ceiling every single time. So that's what makes them really special. They're just so talented. There are a few showcase pieces, but actually this is all their own work, not led by us. We give them all the tools and rehearsals, and then they can go off, and it's wonderful to see what they can do. And that's the first piece. It is accompanied by a picture of 50 or 60 Perrin students, think young teenagers, all with their mouths open. So I think they must have been singing a chorus at full volume at that point, with a background of a rather large poster from the Little Shop of Horrors. The second Balgaram piece this week is entitled Proud Moment with Zoo Arrival. An adorable new arrival has taken its first steps at a Hampshire zoo. The little Sitatonga calf, which was born last Wednesday morning, was on its feet and bonding with Mother Violet and Father Tumnus before Marwell Zoo opened its door to guests. Violet gave birth to her baby in the main Sitatonga paddock, and a short while later she made her first wobbly steps. Adam Ford, senior animal keeper, said, "A very proud moment for the giraffe team and Marwell after a 7-month gestation. Both Violet and Calf seem to be doing well, but it is still early days." And of course, there has to be a picture of the dear little calf, sat nestling, great big ears, and eyes wide open, and a caring mother's head just nudging in behind it.
Everyone say aw. Thank you. Now let's have a look at what's on in the region over the next few weeks. There's quite a lot going on. Who knew? We'll start with the Hat Fair, who are hosting a special event for the coronation. And this Saturday, there will be performances and walkabouts around the square in Winchester. They'll start around about 1 o'clock and end at 5:30. Now, if you like to knit and natter, Shawford Springs Care Home in Compton has invited the local community to join them for free knit and natter workshops. These will take place every Wednesday at 11 a.m, and guests will have a chance to have fun with different knitting projects and meet other local people. That's Shawford Springs Care Home, Wednesdays at 11. A local charity, Winchester Go LDs, is holding a garden and craft fair on May the 10th from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m. Award-winning actor Tommy Jessop will open the event, which is to be held at Upper Farm, Down Farm Lane in Headbourne Worthy. That's on the 10th from 10 a.m. There's a science show for families at the Winchester Science Centre. A new event which will explain the science behind popular animal myths. It's part of the Science Centre's Mystery and Mayhem season, and it's taking place from Saturday, May the 13th to Monday, June the 5th. And families are invited to step into a world of weird science, curiosity and investigation. And if trains are more your thing, there's a fun day out for all the family when Day Out with Thomas, the colour tour, arrives at the Watercress line. This is running from May the 27th to June the 4th, and visitors of all ages will be able to take a ride behind everyone's favourite blue engine. That's the Watercress line. Now, a few other local events at the Theatre Royal. We've got Around the World in 80 Days, That's between the 9th and the 13th of May. So join our raggle-taggle band of travelling circus performers as they embark on their most daring feat yet to recreate the adventures of Phileas Fogg as he sets off on his race around the world. On Wednesday, the 10th of May, the singer Dean Friedman is coming to the Thorndon Hall in Chandler's Ford. I do remember Dean Friedman. It's should be quite a nice concert. And there's an annual plant sale on next Saturday, the 13th of May. Winchester Gardening Club's annual plant sale. Quality flower and vegetable plants grown by club members. And that will be at Middlebrook Street, the Saturday market in the middle of Winchester. So that's next Saturday, the 13th of May. And finally, Tony Christie is bringing his A Life in Music Celebrating 80 Years show to the Concord Club in Stoneham Lane, Eastleigh. That's at 7:30 on Thursday, the 18th of May. And we have one extra item I've been asked to read. It's the Winchester Cathedral Touch Tour for blind and partially sighted visitors. The cathedral now provides pre-bookable touch tours designed especially for blind and partially sighted visitors. The tour will provide you with a history of the building and the stories of some of those who have worked here or were buried at the cathedral. There will be opportunities to touch the building stone that will enhance your understanding of the various styles of architecture of the cathedral. Also, you will be able to touch certain of the cathedral's treasures. The recommended maximum size of each tour is 3 visually impaired visitors. Ideally, you should have a companion who will be granted free entry, but one can be provided on request. The tours will take a little over an hour, and afterwards you will be able to visit the Kings and Scribes exhibition, where there are also many exhibits which you can touch. The next tours will be on Friday the 9th of June at 2:30 p.m. and Monday the 17th of July at 11:30 a.m. And if any group of up to 3 visually impaired people would like a tour on another date, then there's a number to call. You can book either by ringing the visitor services team on 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. Or if you can use the internet, you can email visits@winchester-cathedral.org.uk. And now here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 6th of May, the sun will set at 8:34 p.m. and on Wednesday the 10th of May, the sun will rise at 5:23 and will set at 8:41 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Vara, would you like to click us off, please?
Yes, we have exciting news at the cathedral. Winchester Cathedral's resident peregrine has seen her first chick of the year hatch. Winnie's first chick appeared last Sunday, with 3 eggs still being incubated. Her 4 eggs were laid on March the 22nd, March the 24th, March the 27th and March the 29th. Currently, the chick resembles a small ball of white fluff, but in the next few months it will grow before eventually flying the nest. Winnie had 2 chicks last year, named Elizabeth and George, who flew the nest in August. Writing on Winchester Cathedral's website before the chick hatched, Keith Betton, chairman of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, said, "Winnie has been amazing at incubating her eggs for a month in all this really changeable weather. She has rarely left the nest and just occasionally for a quick feed while William took over covering the eggs. We are now 1 or 2 days away from the hatching of her eggs. They should hatch in the order they were laid. with eggs 1, 2 and 3 either on Saturday or Sunday, and egg 4 maybe a day later. Sometimes the last egg does not get enough warmth to hatch, but Winnie is a very experienced peregrine, so we hope she'll hatch all of them. It has been so wet and cold in the last month that it's possible not all the eggs will hatch, but we are hoping they will. At least the weekend weather looks dry. In the last day before the chicks break out, Winnie will be quite edgy because they start calling from inside the unhatched eggs and she can hear them. Once they've hatched, Winnie will eat the empty eggshells to get rid of them, but this also provides her with useful calcium. Once the chicks are out of the eggs, Winnie will be keeping them warm, with William bringing in the food for her to rip up into small bits. For the next 10 to 14 days she will stay with them, and then she too will go hunting for prey, as they grow fast and no amount of food seems to be enough. To watch the two cathedral peregrine cameras, visit winchester-cathedral.org.uk/explore/peregrines, and there's a photograph of the nest with Winnie and one, I think, little white ball of fluff. Yes, it would be very exciting to look.
University experts, food for thought. Winchester will be the only university attending next month's Extinction or Regeneration conference in London. The university, among other organisations, will be supporting the conference, where experts from across the world will address the problem of how we feed the world without destroying it. Event organisers, Compassion and World Farming, have pinned food production as the primary cause of biodiversity loss and greenhouse gas emissions. Included in the lineup of speakers are two University of Winchester professors, Philip Limbury, Global Chief Executive of Compassion in World Farming, and Dr. Shireen Kassam, who developed the UK's first university-based course on plant-based nutrition. Philip, a UN food systems champion, is an expert on the global effects of industrial farming on animal welfare, wildlife, soil and other natural resources. Dr. Kassam is passionate about promoting plant-based nutrition for health benefits, such as preventing chronic disease and for maintaining health post-cancer treatment. Extinction or Regeneration is a hybrid event taking place in London at the QE2 Conference Centre on May the 11th and the 12th.
What a lot of fun at Spring Rally! The annual Spring Rally at a Victorian waterworks near Winchester attracted scores of people keen to explore the site's heritage and nature on its first day. The Twyford Waterworks opened on Sunday, with visitors able to wander around much of the site as well as see the machinery in operation. The rally saw the Friends of King Alfred buses running a service of vintage buses from Winchester. Matthew Feldwick, chair of the trust behind the site's restoration, said, "It's an absolutely fantastic opportunity for people to discover how water has been pumped into homes across Hampshire for hundreds of years. There has been a good turnout today, and it is wonderful to see so many people coming along and enjoying themselves." Visitors to the event got a close-up of working pumps and other equipment used in providing drinking water from the Hampshire Downs for over 120 years. Meanwhile, a number of vintage cars were on show, as well as model trains. But the piece is accompanied by a picture of a full-size traction engine, and four of the team stood by it, resplendent in a lovely coat of paint, standing outside the Twyford Waterworks.
5-year plan for neglected city park. A charity has been set up by a group of volunteers to help raise money for the maintenance and future improvements of a park in Winchester. Friends of St Giles Hill Park got the approval just over a month after Winchester City Council approved a new 5-year plan for the play area at St Giles Hill. The volunteers, led by horticulturalist Dr Harry Mycock, will organise work days in the park, as well as litter picks and historical guided walks. Dr Mycock, who was the head of garden design and horticulture at Sparsholt College for 10 years, said, "The City Council has produced a plan to halt the decline of this extraordinary park, but lacks the resources to do everything needed without support. That's where the Park Friends come in. We hope to mobilise local people from across Winchester. There are lots of ways to help, from clearing scrub to planting trees and picking up litter. We also want to research the history of the park and need help with fundraising and organising events." Outgoing City Councillor Charles Radcliffe initiated the park proposal and has been involved in setting up the charity. He said, "This park is a unique asset for Winchester. It's a slice of nature in the city with one of the best views of any park in Britain. It's also the backdrop to the rest of the city, looming as it does over the High Street, Cathedral and College. Sadly, over the course of 20 years, parts of the park have become overgrown and dilapidated. It's terrific the council has committed itself to changing that. We want to work with them to help deliver improvements and give the park some much-needed TLC. Secretary of the Friends, Mike Biden, is appealing to people of all ages from across the city to get involved. He said, "Lots of people use the park, coming to watch the sunsets, enjoy the views and walk their dogs. Many have found fond memories of playing with their children or loved ones who regularly visited. We like everyone who cares to support us by becoming a friend. There will be lots of ways to help, and signing up as a friend or following us on Facebook is the best way to stay in touch. The group's first event is a litter pick next Monday, May the 8th, as part of the big help out for the coronation of King Charles III.
Choir's gift tributes to much-loved member. A village choir dedicated their latest concert to the memory of a much-loved member who died spending her last days at Winchester Hospice. The Twyford Singers donated £1,000 to the hospice from their performance of Bernstein's Chichester Psalms at the Church of St Cross in March. Long-standing choir member of 11 years, Elizabeth or Liz Lynn, died at 69 in March, having lived in Winchester for the past 40 years. The cheque was presented to Winchester Hospice by choir chair Ron Finlayson, Liz's husband Mike Slim, and fellow singer Mary Alvang. Mike Slim said, "It was Liz's wish that proceeds from the concert go to the hospice in recognition of the amazing caring service that the hospice provides to both patients and their families." Trustee of Winchester Hospice and consultant nurse and clinical lead for end-of-life care, Maddie Thompson said, "We are truly fortunate to receive such generosity from our community and are touched that Liz wished for these funds to support our hospice service." Liz was also a valued contributor to the Chronicle's Christian Comment column.
City's bus journey back in time. Heritage buses filled the streets of Winchester city centre for a running day. The Friends of King Alfred Buses, FOCAB, organised a wide range of buses on May the 1st. For the first time, FOCAB's newly acquired 1929 Leyland Lion bus headed the lineup of a dozen King Alfred buses representing the local bus company, which closed 50 years ago on April the 28th, 1973. Despite intermittent rain, hundreds of people came to see and ride on the buses. Across the Broadway and in Winchester bus station, there were a range of stalls with a wide selection of transport books and models. Speaking before the event, FOCAB chairman James Freeman said, "Every year we are so excited to be able to provide the opportunity for our many friends and supporters to relive the days of King Alfred buses and coaches. This year has a special extra bonus because we celebrate 50 years since the company closed down." And this piece was accompanied by, as you can probably imagine, a full page spread with a number of pictures of buses, including a picture of half the new 1929 Leyland Lion. The other one I will mention to you, though, is a 5 foot high model of an old yellow 1930s Bournemouth trolley bus. Advertising, funnily enough, a Bournemouth bus rally on the 2nd of July. There we go.
And here's another donation to the Winchester Hospice. "Soroptimist's Gift for Hospice Sanctuary," it's headed. "A Winchester Women's Club has donated a garden bench to a hospice for patients, visitors and staff to use in the Chelsea Flower Show garden. Representatives from Soroptimist International of Winchester dedicated the outdoor seating to Winchester Hospice with a plaque and had the chance to meet the team. Following on from the Chelsea Flower Show in 2021, the Bible Society rebuilt its garden in the grounds of the hospice. The area has an outdoor room and patio, both in sunshine and shade for the residents. Clinical matron Donna Coombs said, "We're so grateful to have been given such a beautiful bench for our patients, visitors and staff to use while enjoying moments of peace and calm in our outdoor space. Our garden is an invaluable area in our hospice grounds, and we feel really privileged to have Soroptimist International of Winchester helping to make it as wonderful as it can be for all." Joe and Julie from the Winchester Club, which raises money, awareness and support for different causes, were delighted to visit and see the Soroptimist roses they donated last summer flourish. The organisation, made up of 19 women, is next meeting for a coffee morning at 9:30 a.m. on May the 16th at Rick Stein in the High Street. Anyone's welcome to go along to learn more about what Winchester Soroptimists do. Winchester Hospice is the only adult hospice in the city and has cared for nearly 600 patients since opening. The facility provides specialist palliative and end-of-life care for those living in Winchester and surrounding areas. And there's a nice photograph of the bench in the garden with Joe and Julie and Winchester Hospice staff sitting on it.
BBC expert at St Swithin's School. A BBC special correspondent recently gave his first speech as president of the Alliance of Literary Societies at St Swithin's School in Winchester. James Naughty of the BBC spoke at the event hosted by the Charlotte M. Yonge Fellowship at St Swithin's School. In front of an audience drawn from across the UK, Mr. Naughty spoke about the importance of literature and its role in enabling people to understand each other across barriers. Celebrating its 15th birthday, the ALS has been brought to Winchester to mark the bicentenary of the birth in Otterbourne in 1823 of Charlotte M. Yonge. A successful Victorian author, with sales across the English-speaking world, Yonge had also played a large part in local life as an educator, a generous benefactor, and a keen supporter of the church. In particular, she had been a member of the founding committee of St Swithin's, then called the Winchester High School for Girls, in 1884. Alice Blakeway, chairman of the Charlotte Yonge Fellowship, said, "This event has introduced delegates from across Britain to Charlotte M. Yonge and Winchester. While Winchester is already a well-known destination, this event has helped to restore Charlotte to her rightful place among British novelists. A joint outing between the Charlotte Yonge Fellowship and the Hampshire Field Club to visit scenes from Yonge's life in Otterbourne and Hursley is being held on Saturday, June the 24th.
Help at hand for veterans. Veterans and their families are being encouraged to come forward to Help for Heroes for support. Across Hampshire, more than 88,500 people have served in the military. Although newspaper headlines are no longer dominated by the impact of conflict on UK veterans, it doesn't mean their struggles have gone away or are any less challenging. Many veterans and their families struggle daily with painful injuries, psychological trauma, isolation, and more. The Armed Forces Charity is calling this the Veterans War, forgotten by many, but very real for them. Every day, Help for Heroes helps veterans like Brian. Brian served for 13 years in the Royal Highland Fusiliers and the Royal Scots before he was medically discharged. For years, horrific scenes from his military career played out on a constant and tormenting loop in his mind. Even though he was around a loving family, he felt alone and lost. Every day was a battle. Every night was worse. When Brian reached out for support from Help for Heroes, everything changed for the better. He said, "I remember sitting down in a cafe and someone coming up and having a chat with me. I could relate to them, and they could relate to me because they understood. Life is better now because I can manage things. But the Veterans War is very real. Every day's a struggle. It's not until you learn how to cope with those struggles that life becomes a bit easier. If you are a veteran or a loved one in need, help is available at Help for Heroes, that's all one word, helpforheroes.org.uk/get-help/ask-for-help. I'll read that again, helpforheroes.org.uk/get-help/ask-for-help.
Waste Idea Whiz Kids. Sixth form students at a school in Winchester reached the top four of a global sustainability competition, beating more than 1,000 teams. The team from Winchester College won $25,000, that's £2,040, as runners-up in the Earth Prize, an international sustainability contest for teenage students organised by the Earth Foundation. The competition saw 1,290 teams enter from 116 countries. Winchester's team, Back to Plastics, made of Max, Erin and Alastair, nearly took the top spot for their idea for industrial production of biodegradable plastics from food waste using genetically engineered bacteria. PHAs are fully biodegradable thermoplastics naturally produced by microorganisms for energy storage. The material, although already made commercially, is limited by high production costs due to purification, raw resources and low production yield. Team member Max Fedorovsky said, "Our plastic substitutes most petroleum-based plastics for packaging and has the potential to reduce plastic waste production by 67% in the UK. Our product would reduce pressure on landfills while repurposing up to 1.5 million tons of food waste annually. The budding scientists spend 20 hours a week in the laboratory on top of A-level revision to conduct dozens of biochemical experiments and have secured a partnership with University College London to continue their work over the summer. The team will be investing their prize money back into the project to try and ensure it can evolve to have real-world impact.
All at the ready for historic occasion. Winchester is preparing to celebrate the coronation of King Charles III on Saturday, which for most will be their first. Excitement is building with street parties, picnics and screenings to be held across the city and in market towns and villages such as Wickham, Denmead, Whiteley, Kingsworthy and Bishop's Waltham. The Cathedral, the Guildhall and local businesses will contribute to the celebrations across the weekend. In the evenings, the Guildhall will be lit up with a projection to show the story of a king-in-waiting, symbols of the coronation and a celebration of England's ancient capital and its royal connections. Winchester Cathedral will host Indian restaurant Rim Jim, will be handing out 1,000 servings of free food in the outer close on May the 6th from 12 noon. The restaurant held a similar event on the day of the Queen's funeral, September the 20th last year. Owner Shoukat Ahmed said, "We will be offering free food free to the community. It means so much to us to do so. I love Great Britain. I love this city. And I love the King. We are offering this as a blessing to this country and to the King." Mr. Ahmed added that they will be serving chicken and vegetable biryanis, pakora fritters, yogurt and fruit juices. Of course, the coronation service will be screened inside the cathedral on Saturday. The Ark in Jerry Street will be holding a workshop for children to design their own royal crown. Winchester City Museum will have a traditional Punch and Judy show on May the 8th. David Wilde is presenting the fun-packed show for the whole family, and shows will take place at 11 a.m, 12:30 and 2 p.m. At the time of the last coronation on June the 2nd, 1953, the Southern Daily Echo reported that Bishop's Waltham rang with gaiety and laughter when the 27-year-old princess became Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. And there's a photograph of a party in 1953 in Brandy with children and adults seated at tables and wearing hats and garlands and so on.
The rates improvement. The rate of survival for cancer patients in Hampshire is still rising, new figures have revealed. NHS figures show 75.6% of people diagnosed with cancer in 2020 survived the first year. This was up from a survival rate of 75.1% in 2019 and an increase on 70% a decade prior. The data also shows the one-year survival rate for women with breast cancer in Hampshire increased from 96.1% in 2010 to 97.5% in 2020. Michelle Mitchell, Cancer Research UK Chief Executive, said despite the data showing improvements in cancer survival in England, there is still an unacceptable disparity across England. She said, "Our chances of surviving cancer should not vary depending on where we live." She added, "Workforce shortages are a critical barrier in delivering timely diagnosis and treatment for cancer patients," and called on the government to publish a fully costed workforce plan for England to improve staff recruitment and retainment. The survival rate for colorectal cancer patients also rose, and lung patient survival rate had risen from 35.3% a decade prior to this to 49.2% in 2020. Matt Hayes, Medical Director for Wessex Cancer Alliance, on behalf of Hampshire Integrated Care Board, said There is always more to do, though, and we continue to work to ensure people are diagnosed sooner, as we know this greatly improves chances of survival.
Over 50s Nail Cutting Clinic. A Hampshire charity is providing toenail cutting services to help over 50s stay active and remain mobile. Age Concern Hampshire has clinics available in both Lock's Heath and Winchester, amongst others across the county. Uncut toenails risk making walking uncomfortable, and healthy feet help to improve balance, preventing falls and injuries. Hannah, Head of Wellbeing Services at Age Concern Hampshire, said, "By keeping our costs as low as possible, we hope to make this service available to everyone that needs it."
Coffee shop couple hope to spread the word. The owners of Winchester's newest mobile business have spilled the beans about their popular new enterprise. The couple have converted a horse box into a coffee shop, and they've been appearing at Winchester's Market on the High Street in recent weeks. Molly Mitchell and her partner Prismek Popelkowski are the owners of The Last Cuppa, the newest coffee business in the city. This business, set up in a refurbished horse box, focuses on distributing a religious message as well as good coffee. The unique venture joined the market just outside the old Debenhams building in February this year and has been a popular attraction ever since. Molly told the Chronicle that using a repurposed horse box, not just for convenience, it's something different and unique. As the name suggests, religion is indeed a large part of this unique coffee experience. Molly said, "Our business is a vessel to spread the gospel and be good disciples, without getting on stage to preach." She added, "Our ramp is available to you all. You don't have to be religious to visit our business.
And here's another piece that could draw you to the front of the old Debenhams store. High Street market stall's gone coronation crazy. A market stall in Winchester has gone coronation crazy and is proving an eye-catching addition to the city's market. The stall, outside the empty Debenhams unit, has everything people need to mark the occasion in style. From flags to bunting, tea towels and hats, plus more. It is even selling a life-size Charles cutout. Peter Lovesey, who runs the market, usually runs the Coastal UK store, selling belts to visitors to the market. But now, he is in charge of the most patriotic stall in Winchester. Peter told the Chronicle, "The coronation is coming up, which is great for the country. People want to celebrate properly. We're selling crowns and decorations, bunting, hats, you name it, and it's here. Winchester has been swept by coronation fever, and readers can visit Peter's stall, located in the High Street, to fill their boots with patriotic merchandise before celebrations begin. Readers can find contact information for Peter at coastaluk.com." And, of course, there has to be a great big picture of Peter standing next to the life-size, and it's just higher than him, cardboard cutout of King Charles, with his coronation, looks like it's some sort of coronation robe on. And of course he's smiling.
Made in Chelsea's Josh runs City Marathon. A reality TV personality completed a marathon in Winchester at the weekend as part of an epic fundraiser for the Samaritans. Josh Patterson, best known for appearing in Made in Chelsea, is currently in the middle of his Run for 1 Million challenge. He is aiming to run 76 marathons in 76 cities in 76 days. If successful, Josh will set a new world record as the first person to complete a marathon in every city in the UK consecutively. Josh ran his 63rd marathon in Winchester on Sunday, April the 30th. He started at just after 9 a.m. and finished at 3:40 p.m. and the time was 6 hours, 35 minutes and 52 seconds. Wayne Fletcher, Samaritan's branch director for Winchester, joined Josh for around 7 miles of the course. A small group of Samaritan's volunteers were at Winchester Cathedral to cheer him on. So far, Josh has raised £127,827 of his £1 million target. And there's a picture of Josh with the Samaritans. He's in the middle with a beanie hat on top, and he's got his arms on both the men on either side of him. I should think perhaps they're holding him up for a bit.
I think he's done very well.
Yes, amazing. Right.
This is a more serious issue. It's about free school meal fares for infants. Ministers are actively looking at the funding for free school meals for the youngest pupils after the Winchester MP warned of a growing gap between the money provided and the cost of food. Steve Brime was alerted to the issue by infant school head teachers in his constituency. Opening a recent debate in Parliament, Mr. Brime said, "I want to focus on the pressure being felt by head teachers across my constituency, and I'm sure elsewhere, when it comes to meeting the cost of what is supposed to be a universal entitlement to free school meals for infant-aged children. There is a gap between the funding received and the costs of putting good quality food on the table. The inevitable impact of this falls on school budgets, which are making up the shortfall. Although Mr. Brine welcomed the government's recent decision to increase the funding rate for infant school for free school meals to by 7p per pupil, he said this is far from being the rise in food inflation. The MP shared figures from Winchester schools, including one which had an £11,000 deficit on school meals during last year. In response, Schools Minister Nick Gibbs said the government was actively looking at the issue.
Journey's End for 100-mile walker Alex. The musician finished a 100-mile walk of the South Downs Way with a song in memory of his music teacher. Alex Ling, 28, trekked from Eastbourne to Winchester across 6 days in his challenge 100 Miles for Martin, honouring his sixth form music teacher who died 10 years ago, age 53. Completing the final straight in Winchester High Street, Alex was greeted by a group of singers and supporters who joined him in performing On the Steps of the Buttercross, a folk song for the much-loved composer. The Martin Reed Foundation was founded to continue the teacher's legacy and support young composers. The 100-mile challenge has raised more than £1,300, surpassing the £1,000 target. Alex said, "We were behind schedule when we eventually met our fellow hikers at Chesford Head at 4 o'clock. The shop supplying the power for our digital piano would close at 5:30. That gave us less than an hour and a half to walk 5 miles. We charged down the hillside towards Winchester. As we passed the village of Chilcombe, it was all or nothing. We picked up the pace, even breaking into a run. Tearing through the outskirts of Winchester, we arrived just in the nick of time. A merry troop of singers were there to greet us. A quick run through of the chorus attracted passers-by and all joined together for a rousing rendition of this great Hampshire folk song. A fitting way to remember a truly great music teacher and to support the charity set up in his name. Many thanks to everyone for supporting 100 Miles for Martin. To donate or read Alex's full report, go to crowdfunder.co.uk/p/100 martin-reed-foundation-100miles.
Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front of the wallet, and return it as soon as possible. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, and of course, many thanks to our readers, Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
Farah Williams.
Goodbye.
And Paul Newman.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening, and until next time, goodbye. Have a great week.